Okay, folks, we're ready to go when you want. I'm thumbs up.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the regularly scheduled June 25th school board meeting of San Luis Coastal School District. The board completed its special meeting touring Napomo New Tech High, Arroyo Grande High School, Morro Bay High School, and last but not least, our own SLO High School. It was very informative, and I think the board members got a lot of things to think about out of the tour. We have not held a closed session because we ran out of time on the tour. We probably will meet in closed session at the conclusion of this meeting to consider the superintendent's performance evaluation. I don't think there are any other items on the closed session agenda other than that. So we will move on to our regular agenda, and we will go first to public comment. Oh, no, this is public comment limited to closed session items. We'll go on to consensus on the order of business. You okay on the order of business there, Mr. Buckman?
Yes, sir.
All right. Welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
And I'll see no change on the order of business. We didn't take any action on closed session items. We'll move on to approval of the minutes. I believe we have two sets to approve. One is the minutes of May 28th, and I'll entertain a motion on those. I'll move approval of the minutes of May 28th.
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion, corrections, or additions? Okay. Seeing none, Mark, you all right on those?
Great. Okay. We're fine.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes?
I need to abstain as I've missed both meetings.
Okay. Excellent. So it passes 6-0. And we'll move on to the minutes of the June 11th meeting.
I move acceptance of the June 11th minutes.
I'll second.
Thank you. Mrs. Eisendrath Rogers has made a motion to approve, and Mr. Questenberry has seconded. Any discussion, corrections, additions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0.
And I need to abstain again. Thank
Mark,
you.
One abstention. Thank you, Mark. We had received correspondence. Have we received correspondence, Mrs. Holmes?
Thanks. What you have written from me is what I'm about to say. My name is Elise Unger. I'm a resource specialist teacher at Del Mar Elementary School, a position I've held at various elementary and secondary schools in the district since 1991. I'm here tonight in support of the Elementary Resource Specialist Program and teachers. Many of them that I contacted were on vacation and not here. I am telling the story of the school I teach at, Del Mar, but the same story can be told by any one of the resource teachers at any one of the other elementary sites. As a resource specialist teacher, I wear many hats: teacher, case manager of my students' IEPs, lawyer as far as keeping in compliance with the special education laws. I'm a resource to general education teachers to assist with all students with educational and or behavioral needs, a continuous member of Del Mar's student success team, in which there were over 60 meetings the last school year, and an advocate for the students I work with, among other things. With all of that being said, tonight I'm speaking to you as an advocate for the 17 students currently on my caseload whose IEPs require that they receive the teaching and accommodations laid out in their IEPs so that they can be academically successful. 2 months ago, the school review board and the district received a review. 2 months ago, the school board and the district received a review of our special education department from School Services of California. In the report, it said that the recommendation of caseload for special education teachers was based solely on numbers, not on the intensity of student needs. When they were asked specifically about intensity of needs, the review team acknowledged that this was an issue, but that intensity was too difficult to measure and was not taken into account in the report. on the second to the last week of the school year that just ended, I was told that the resource paraeducator's hours would be cut in half, from 20 hours per week to 10 hours per week, due to the number of students I will be serving in the fall. I'm here to talk about what a resource program looks like when the actual students are viewed as individuals with specific needs, as compared to what it will look like if they are solely regarded as a number on a caseload. Last year, a group of 5 fifth-grade boys came to the resource room for reading. They came during their guided process reading time. At our school, students are pulled from their general education classroom during the subjects in which reading remediation is needed because they cannot keep up with or learn from the general education classroom and curriculum. All 5 of these boys had reading levels starting from the end of first grade level through the beginning of third grade level, as measured by the beginning of the year BAS test, which has been adopted by our district to measure reading growth and achievement. Of these boys, Carlos, not his real name, had been in our program since first grade and could not break the reading code. If asked he was a reader, Carlos would shake his head. He often said that he hated to read. Carlos's disability is other health impairment due to his ability to sustain attention and focus. Coupled with the fact that he speaks Spanish at home and English at school, academics have been difficult for him. Carlos was the boy reading first grade level when he entered fifth grade at 11:30 in our classroom with a recess break, as he has math, written language, and reading goals on his IEP. The last boy's disability is emotional disturbance. He has goals in written language, study skills, and behavior. This student was argumentative and belligerent with all school staff and often caused our entire classroom to stop so that he could be de-escalated. Sometimes my aide or I had to escort him to the office, leaving one of us in charge of the rest of the students. These boys came to my classroom for 40 minutes a day and concentrated on reading. At the same time while reading was going on, at the horseshoe table, the paraprofessional in the resource room was working with 2 third graders, one who is bilingual in speech and language impaired and reads at the end of a kindergarten level, and the other a sweet, loving girl, also bilingual in speech and language impaired. Because she has received individual reading lessons for half an hour a day the past 2 years, she is now reading at second grade level as she enters fourth grade. These 2 students work on math, and we're learning to subtract and how to count money. In the same group were 2 second graders who were learning the basics of addition and place value, one with an emotional disturbance, and the other also other health impaired and very oppositional about doing any work. He had to be constantly prompted, and data had to be collected as to his ability to work independently. We also see a first grade student at this time to support math and writing. The student has such a difficult home life that we need to feed him in the morning and nurture him through his day. He receives 2 hours a day of resource services and has goals in academics and study skills. Math in first, second, and third grade general ed classrooms are taught at the same time as upper grade reading. The third grade girl and boy spend from 10:30 to 2 o'clock with a break for lunch in the resource room. They have goals in math, written language, and reading, and receive services for all 3 subjects. The second grade boys do the same. At times, the SCIA assigned to the second grade boys could join us in the resource room, which was a help. The first grade boy spends 2 hours a day, according to his IEP, but often needs more time. Data collection on the behavior and compliance and work habits are taken for both second graders, one of the fifth grade students and the first grade student, while we are working on academics with everyone. All of this incredible learning is going on between 10:30 and noon. I mention this because this is a small sample of our teaching day. This is what the resource room looks like all day, a variety of grade levels, needs, personalities, and disabilities. This schedule is not unique to Del Mar. This is a typical caseload for all RSP teachers. There are days when students with behavior issues are brought in by their special circumstance instructional assistants who provide one-on-one support mandated by their IEP because they are so disruptive in their own classrooms that the learning of others was being interrupted. Other days, our student with autism and secondary emotional disturbance will come in for a break. On occasion, she will sit in the beanbag chair sulking and crying until she calms down enough to go back to class. Most days she needs to process with one of us, which will take us away from the students we are teaching. And sometimes her behaviors are so disruptive, we need to clear our classroom, remove the rest of the students, while the other adult waits for her to calm down enough for us to get her to the office. Now imagine what this would look like, and who needs her throughout recess and lunch and all academics. So she will be coming into my room when there's PE or music. I'm fighting for to keep the high quality and defensible program that I have always maintained for my students in the district. We can't forget the IEP is a legal document. I have an obligation, as does the rest of the IEP team that signed the document, to carry it out. I feel like we're being asked to use a Band-Aid and hope for the best, rather than doing our best for these students with special needs. I cannot pretend that the prognosis is anything but grim. Thank you for hearing me. I know you've had a long day, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Next.
Charlotte Whitman, please.
Hi, I'm Charlotte Whitman. I'm a resource specialist at Bishop's Peak Teach, and next year I'll be helping out at Pacific Beach part-time. I think what Elise described is my classroom also. I don't think there's much difference in what goes on any of the sites. It's real intense. It can have days that it's a lot of fun and a lot of days it's a lot of work. My concerns are two. One is the inconsistencies with staffing across the resource programs in the district, and also just the provision for management of the support staff that we have on site. I think probably one of the main things in that first concern of inconsistencies is the accuracy of the information that is being used to determine staffing. At probably March, April maybe, it might have been May even, we were asked to provide information to student support services about our caseload and what we anticipated for the fall. On paper, my caseload is represented at 18, and in actuality right now I have 21 with one pending in September. So I will start the school year with 22 students, not the 18 that were represented. This last year, I've had 4 hours of resource support aid time, and we've had 3 SCIAs on staff. Next year, I will have 4 SCIAs that are bell-to-bell people who were with the students one-on-one throughout the school day, and no resource aid time staffed. I was told that the resource aid time and the support that I had would be gleaned from the independence time of our students with SCIAs. Unfortunately, because our students that we have are bell-to-bell, which means they require someone with them the entire school day, I only have one student who will be a sixth grader who has a 30-minute independence time built into his IEP program. And we have used that time last year and will continue to do so for his aide to take her lunch break. We do, for him, she takes her morning break when the student is in the classroom in a one-on-one kind of setting with the teacher, or a two-to-one, a small group setting for reading. So there's inconsistencies. I know, as Mrs. Unger just said, at Del Mar, she's starting with 17 students. I know she has some pending things coming up. She has 2 hours of ride them with breaks. That's mandated by us as employers, and it's my job to help oversee that. So unless I physically go in and give those aides their breaks, there's no one on site to do that. There are 4 students in 4 different grades, 4 different classrooms, 2 grades, 2 different classrooms. It's just not possible to manage that. And again, because I am supposed to be at Bishop's Peak on paper 60% of the time, at Pack Beach with, well, one group says 3, some people say 5 students, 25% of the time, there's no guarantee that I'll be there in time to do that. Just on a personal note, I'm just a little bit concerned. On paper, I'm an 85% employee. I know I'm full-time. It worries me that with that little 15%, if there's a little outlying place that needs one more person, that I'm going to be pulled out there too. And that really concerns me about being able to implement an effective program at either site. Sue, my concerns are that we have consistency across sites as far as staffing, and that we're able to support the staff that we have appropriately and meet the IEP goals and objectives for our students, and also to meet the mandates for employment. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Jim? Anybody else? Okay. Anyone else would like to address the board on an item that's not on the agenda? Seeing no one, we'll close public comment and move on to state budget update. Dr. Brader.
Good evening, board, or good afternoon. It feels like evening. It's been a long day. It's been a worthwhile one, I believe. As a state budget update, I would like to share with you the latest from the SF Squared report, and it appears that the Department of Finance has put something out as of yesterday regarding the revenues in California, and the May revision forecast for the budget undershot the revenues by 17.4%, and that's $1 billion. So it's a significant amount of money. I wish I could say that's coming right back into our programs in our district, but as you know, with the LCFF and the way the governor has structured the budget, we won't see that in our reduction in fair share. We're not necessarily going to see that in additional revenues. So I'll be interested in knowing how they're going to utilize those extra funds. Hopefully, they'll show tremendous insight with regard to the cost, the true cost of implementing the Common Core state standards, specifically with regard to technology, professional training for staff, and instructional materials. Those are the things that I see as paramount for a successful transition. So the good news is revenues are up. The uncertain component is how the governor and the legislature will choose to use those resources.
Thank you. Let's see. Public comment on that? Anybody in the public want to comment on that item?
And for the board to know, our focus is for teachers to be proficient. And that throughout our training that we've gone through everything, teachers aren't distinguished forever. It's like a place you visit at times and you come back. But really helping teachers to become proficient is the key. So the Danielson framework and instructional model, this was our pilot year. Again, we started kind of late because the teachers' union agreed to the contract October. So, you know, normally you would start the goal-setting session, getting into the evaluation process a lot earlier. So we started that in October, got it kicked off, and again, a pilot year. So a lot of things in terms of both principals and teachers and kind of learning the framework as you go through the evaluation system. Now, again, it was a pilot year, so none of the evaluations at the end of the year, what happened, you know, went against teachers or went against things. And so that said, I would say we also did a whole survey with both our principals and our staff. Overwhelmingly, I would say, excited about the new model, the new system that we're using. Did have some concerns that we have addressed, and so there is a teacher administrator evaluation group that has been meeting over the past 2 years and continues to meet and plans on meeting next year to look at an administrator survey as well as continue to make any modifications, changes that we need to make to our current system. So some of the things that came out of those surveys were great things, such as we had them focusing on too many components. So out of the four domains, the planning preparation, classroom management, instruction, as well as professional responsibilities, there was just too many that they were having to focus on. So again, with a group, decided to narrow those down. Another aspect that came out of the survey was principal calibration. Now, how do we know that this is going to be a fair system at Del Mar Elementary School versus San Luis High versus Morro Bay, and that you know, some principals weren't going to be tougher or easier than maybe at other schools? So calibration was a key aspect that we really needed to look at and figure out, okay, how are we going to address those concerns? The other thing that came up was just the amount of work. I mean, this evaluation system kind of changes a lot in terms of the way our principals do business, the way, you know, and how our teachers see evaluation. And that, again, it is an instructional model that we're putting out. This is not just the California Standards for the Teaching Profession. It is a big kind of thing for us to get started. So that said, teachers, I would say overall, a positive feeling. They like the rubric aspect of it. They have tied into it a lot more than the old kind of just pass-fail kind of system that we had. So one of the things that we found, and working with Jennifer Donnelly a little bit and looking online, was this program called TeachScape. So this is something, it's a program that is kind of nationwide tied in. In fact, Arkansas, the whole state, just, you know, they've adapted the TeachScape program for their entire state. And so what this does is it addresses those concerns that really rose out of those staff and principal surveys. So the first part of it is called Focus. And this is something that we introduced to our principals at our principals retreat last week. And it really is, it's basically a calibration system. So what the principals do is they go through, and if you can click on Focus, Kim, really quick for me. Just click OK. They do assist. Go through a process where, again, it overviews the framework, talks about it, discusses it, talks about minimizing bias. So we just did that with the principals last week because no matter whether you think so or not, we all have our biases about what teaching should look like, what a teacher should look like when they're, you know, maybe some people really like group work. Maybe some people like the lecture model. Some people like technology. You know, whatever those biases are, we need to, as administrators going into a classroom, minimize those biases. And again, I would say the major difference between the system we're using now versus the system we had in the past is in the past, it was very opinion-based. I went into your room. I watched you one time. You know, hey, you're doing a great job. Satisfactory. Or vice versa. Maybe I didn't like something that I saw when I came into your room, and so I gave you an unsatisfactory mark. So this system is supposed to be very evidence-based, take the opinion out. And so that's what this calibration system does. So if you click on 2A, Kim, so this is kind of what the principals are being tasked to do over the course of the summer. They go into 2A, and what this program does is it takes 2A, which is creating an environment of respect and rapport, and it walks the principals through videos of what a proficient teacher looks like, what a basic teacher looks like, what a distinguished teacher looks like, what an unsatisfactory teacher looks like. And the evidence that you would gather as you did an observation and comparing those with the actual rubric and the framework. So it walks them through the entire process for 2A, for 2B, for 2C. So this is something that goes through the entire, all those observable components are something that our principals are going to be taught and work through. And so at the end of this process, and so it's an interesting dynamic. So they've taken like level 3, the proficient standard, and they have 4 different videos that the principal will watch. So they watch a proficient teacher, just one video of a teacher who's proficient in this area, and again, focused on creating an environment of respect and rapport. Then they'll watch a second video of a proficient teacher. Then they'll watch a high proficient teacher and a low proficient teacher. Because what they've said, and as we work with the TeachScape people, it's really the basic and proficient, knowing the difference between a basic and proficient level is the toughest part to calibrate to work on. And so that's kind of the focus area. Everybody, you know, as they go through the process, they know what a distinguished teacher looks like. Students in the classroom, I mean, taking over the class, teaching. And we also know what an unsatisfactory teacher looks like for the most part. But it's really that proficient basic that we really need to make sure our principals are calibrated and they know what they're doing. And so, again, this walks them through those processes. So, Kim, if you go back to the last page. And the principal, so it's about 20 hours of training that they go through and walk through and look at, you know, critical attributes. And they literally have them test, you know, they'll show them a video of a classroom. And they'll have them gather evidence, and they'll break it down, and they have to grade the evidence in those 4 different domains, the different categories, unsatisfactory, basic, proficient, distinguished. So throughout, they go through that process. Then they actually do practice tests. So once they have gone through this 20 hours of training, then they actually go through and do some practice tests to try it. And then they have 2 2.5-hour evidence-gathering observations that they have to do. And basically what TeachCape has told us is that as long as the principals, and we're going to go through the calibration process, but that the principals can use these videos, maybe during TCT time or during a staff meeting with staff or during PD time, and really touch base on all the different areas that, that maybe the school is focused on. So those are the key parts of focus. So, Kim, if you'll click over to Reflect really quick. So Reflect is the part that's going to – and this doesn't give it justice, but basically what they've done is they've created workflows, TeachCape has, for each of our different tracks. So track one for us are teachers in their first 2 years of service. And then we have track two, which is our teachers that are basically our tenured teachers in the district that are either on a formal evaluation year or are on a self-directed year. So they have flows for them in terms of the goal-setting conference. So all of this is going to be online. So the goal-setting meetings, the goal worksheets, the observation forms, the walkthrough forms, because one of the critical things that came out of the evaluation team was they wanted to make sure that principals did walkthroughs. And so they have specific Charlotte Danielson walkthrough forms that, that you can use that, again, cater down to just the components that have been agreed upon by the principal and the teacher. So all of those components are in part of the Reflect. So basically kind of becomes a working document between the principal and teacher. The principal can upload documents to this page. All the teachers are going to have a Reflect page. They'll be able to upload maybe their lesson plan or things that they've done, their pre-conference form, things like that. So there's going to take some in-servicing and working with teachers on that. But, again, getting rid of the paper process, hopefully making this a little bit easier tie-in. You can set your goal-setting meetings, your observation meetings, all that through the Reflect process. As well as the principal can go through, do their walkthrough observation, fill out the evidence that they gathered, mark where they saw them in terms of the basic proficient, those types of things, and then they can email that note to the teacher so that they can get that instant feedback about their observation. So some really cool things with that Reflect piece, I think that, and again, we'll see. We'll see how it works. We'll see what's good, what's bad about it. We'll adapt. We'll adjust to it. But they're more than willing to do whatever we want to do to kind of mold it to a San Luis Coastal Unified School District site. And so they put all of our forms that we've agreed upon in our committee on the Reflect site. So the last one is Learn. And this is something that I'm sure that our Instructional Services Department, you know, along with the fantastic training that they're going through in terms of with math and Writer's Workshop and all the things that we're doing, this instructional model is also kind of tied in, again, with the Common Core, all those types of things. So they have a whole, I guess, is it not coming up? Okay. So Learn, basically, is kind of a consortium of information and videos and learning and learning communities that teachers can tie into, both within our own district as well as outside into the kind of Charlotte Danielson network. So there's – here we go. So there are complete – so and you can just go down. So teachers can go – so teachers will have access to this page. That's one of the things that we got when we signed up. But there are whole courses that you can take. You know, questioning strategies, you know, all those different domains that are tied to the rubric are all tied to this. And again, they have some featured courses that are listed, maybe some key things that are happening throughout the nation. So this is a nationwide, and they do a great job with it. And so and they really mold it to kind of the principles. So the elementary principals, they're seeing videos kindergarten through sixth grade. The high school principals are seeing videos of high school. 9th through 12th grade, middle school 6th through 8th. So they've really, I mean, it's kind of amazing in terms of what they put together for this product, and I really think it's going to be something that helps us to move this evaluation instrument on. And I truly believe that in terms of the, if there's anything we've done in the past couple of years, and even talking to Rick, I mean, this is probably one of the most collaborative things we've been able to do with our teachers union, maybe ever. And so, and they are really tied in. They're great. Again, we're going to continue to meet with them over the course of the year, work on the administrator evaluation, and you know, listen to their feedback, do staff surveys, and see what we can do to just make this a great thing for both administrators and staff.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. Mark, you hearing and seeing everything okay? Mark?
Mr. Yes, Walter. Hi, Walter. Yes, thank you
okay,
very much.
Good. Any board member comments or questions? Well, let's go to the public first, if anyone in the public would like to speak on this item. Okay, seeing no one, we'll go to the board. Jim?
Could you explain how this will dovetail with the Common Core standards?
Well, some of the videos, if you go to the featured courses, they tie into the instructional model. I mean, a lot of those, kind of like we heard from Mr. Neff today at New Tech High School, a lot of the teaching philosophies and practices that teachers need to use with the Common Core are things that include, you know, different instructional strategies, which include the questioning and getting student responses and getting students more involved in the learning. So those are all things that they have. And I think if you go into the featured courses or you go into it, they literally have Common Core courses that are tied, videos that are tied to it that teachers can go on and they can look at it themselves, or a principal can use that as part of their professional development, again, during TCT time, staff meetings, those types of things. So it's exciting.
Okay, any other question, Marilyn?
Thank you. Mr. Pinkerton, I understand that this was the trial year for this.
Yes, it was a pilot.
And there are kinks to be worked out. But
absolutely.
In speaking with teachers myself, I received the feedback that some were very disappointed that they didn't receive distinguished mm-hmm. marks, and that while the principals may have been aware that distinguished is something that you may hop in and out of in certain areas, mm-hmm. and that proficient really is the goal, that information I think was not disseminated as well as it might have been
sure.
to the teachers, so that they felt that they were less than or had not not done as well as they might have mm-hmm. in receiving proficient. So has that been taken care of now? That information is understood?
So I think that's part of this process. Again, it was a pilot year. We started off late going through it, so we learned from the process. And again, we had some principals that gave too many distinguished probably marks with their staff. And then we had other principals that gave hardly any. So that's why this calibration piece is so important, and I think it's going to be important for teachers to hear that our principals are calibrated, that it's not just kind of up to my opinion and how things go. And so, but it's going to be something.
Read that rubric and look at the critical attributes. It'd be very hard for me to imagine somebody seeing themselves as distinguished across the board. And so I think it's more a matter of really understanding what the difference between basic, proficient, distinguished is. And I think that Charlotte Danielson herself says, yeah, our best teachers visit distinguished, and they might visit it a lot, but they don't live there. That it's just this, the profession of teaching is so complicated and so complex, and which I think this model honors. And so distinguished really is maybe the ultimate goal, but proficient is what we're looking for. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Millar?
Okay, Mark, hang on. We're going to go to Chris, and then we'll go to you.
Sure. So is there any way for the principals or the observers to go and to videotape what they're seeing and to be able to provide examples to the teachers of what's proficient versus distinguished and have those discussions based on that kind of evidence?
So absolutely. And there are a lot of, again, those videos with the proficient, distinguished, in terms of the classroom teachers that they have and all of the videos, catalogs, everything, they can use those with staff.
I'm talking
But right. even for, that's a culture that we have to develop in our school district, that teachers are willing to be videoed and put themselves out there and to be, you know, to go online or do that. But absolutely, there's a whole, so teachers could video themselves in the classroom, download that and send it to their principal to look at. I mean, so there's that whole aspect and what can happen with that can be tied to this.
Right.
And so teachers are able to download and upload artifacts as well as videos to the system. And it may be something that we, you know, maybe Amy does a PD, a writer's workshop PD or something, and you know, that ties into it that we can then upload to the video stream, our own community, San Luis Coastal, that then other teachers in the area, you know, in our district can look at. So that feature is part of this.
And I could see that requiring the approval of the person being videoed,
absolutely.
Of course, but
absolutely.
Sometimes a picture is worth 1,000 words.
No, for
especially
sure.
Especially the difference between what could be proficient and distinguished or basic and proficient.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mark?
Yeah, actually, Chris just hit upon it. the words I was going to use, Rick, if I could, if I understand this is, so with the videos that they can watch, we suddenly have sort of some comparative, some maybe benchmark, and it, I think Chris addressed that. I just want to make sure I understand it.
Yeah, that sounds accurate. And we have, you know, we have teachers currently who are asking their principals to film them with flip cameras and use that as part of their kind of collaborative evaluation process. But that is only with permission. I mean, we do not film teachers without their express permission, and that's an understanding we have. I believe it's an understanding in Ed Code, but it's certainly an understanding we have with our teachers' association. So it's all with permission only.
Anything else, Mark?
No, thank you very much.
Let me just follow up. But is there going to be ongoing calibration of the evaluators?
Sure. And share that with our principals for them to kind of see,
yes,
so that they can compare how even just this pilot year, how they did versus other teachers, other principals. And so that was really, that was one of, I broke out some actual evaluations and had the principals look at each other's evaluations, of course, took all the names off and let them kind of see that. And so those were really eye-opening learning experiences for our principals.
Excellent.
About how they were doing things. And so, yes, absolutely, those are things that we need to do and continue to do. As you know, just again to bring that fidelity to the to this process, so that evaluation really becomes something that is, you know, it's a kind of a treasure. I mean, it's probably the most important thing we do.
Ellen,
I appreciate that transparency. I think it's important for all participants to realize that this is a transparent process. And I will, my question has to do with turnover in personnel, so as we have new principals come in, or that they will undergo this same, they'll have all this available to them. This isn't just a one.
Absolutely. They'll have to be calibrated.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments or questions? Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
Pinkerton. Appreciate it. And we'll move on to item 7.01, agreement with California School Employees Association regarding the effects of the 2013-2014 layoffs on bargaining unit positions. Mr. Pinkerton.
So we did a sit down with CSEA and agreed to some language in terms of specifically with our instructional assistants. In the past, it's kind of been all over the board with instructional assistants working everywhere from 20 days to 160 days to actual what the position says, 180 days. And so we agreed to that language with them, kind of set some new standards for principals to work with, for employees to work with, and also set up a process whereby we would rehire individuals off of our reemployment list. So that's what you have in front of you, and so this is a time for us to do a public hearing based on that agreement.
Okay, I was going to ask if anybody from the public wanted to, but we'll just do a public hearing instead. We'll open the public hearing. Would anyone like to address this item on the agenda from the public? Seeing no one, we'll close the public hearing, bring us back to the board. Any questions or discussions among board members? Seeing none, is that the extent of the action we take tonight, was the public hearing?
Probably approval as well.
Oh, action consent. Okay, great.
Thank you.
And we'll move on to item 8.01, student achievement, third report on initiatives for student success. And here comes our student success team to the podium.
And Mr. Millar, before we get started, I'd like to take a moment to reframe our perspective and introduce someone new to our team. As you know, we had to make some considerable reductions to our budget for the upcoming year. And as a result of that, we had to consolidate two departments into one. So our instructional services, learning and achievement department, along with the information services technology department, we are literally have some coffee. And then in July, when she starts in earnest with us, we'll sit down and we'll work it out as a team together. We'll be creative. We'll be efficient and fair, and we'll make it happen like we always do. So welcome, Kim.
Not sure if I'm going to say good afternoon or good evening, but hello, school board. Are we Common Core ready? This afternoon, we would like to answer that question by sharing some highlights with you from this year's student achievement data through the lens of our transition to the Common Core. Our timeline shows you how we are right in the middle of the transition towards full implementation in 2014-15. Many of those items you see here listed in the transition phase have already occurred or are well underway. Our presentation will focus specifically on two areas of the transition plan: the implementation of district common assessments and an update on district interventions that align with the new standards. A significant part of the report we'll be presenting is based on the results of the district common assessments given this year. In order to fully appreciate the beauty of the Common Assessment Plan, it is important to understand why we engaged in this process in the first place. It was never about putting in place a high-stakes testing system. From their inception, we established four purposes for our district common assessments. First of all, to implement Common Core standards. The assessments you will hear about are all aligned to the more rigorous expectations of the Common Core. They include performance assessments that mirror the types of tasks students will be asked to complete with the Smarter Balanced Assessment System. To see how our students are performing, by using these common assessments aligned to the new standards, we've been able to see where our students are struggling and how the rigor of classroom teaching and learning needs to shift. To inform our professional development, as you've heard, we've had a bit of professional development in this last year. Those scoring days have provided teachers not only an opportunity to see how students are performing, but to work collaboratively with grade level teams to improve teaching practices that will most effectively increase student outcomes. To guide our classroom instruction, finally, what we are learning from the common assessments is helping us support the needed changes in classroom teaching and learning. Differentiated instruction is the key to our success, and Common Core-like assessments are the kinds of tests that we want our teachers to teach to. We're going to begin tonight with English Language Arts and ELD assessments. In elementary, you will learn about the increased text complexity required of the Common Core and how our elementary students are doing in meeting those more rigorous standards. In secondary, our students have been focused on informational text and argumentative essay writing, which is a really big deal in the Common Core state standards. In kindergarten through 12th, writing is now treated as an equal partner to reading in the Common Core. And more than this, writing is assumed to be the vehicle through which a great deal of the reading work and reading assessment will occur. Finally, I cannot overestimate.
Data that I'd like to share tonight is something that you may have seen earlier with our instructional coaches back in March during their writing presentation. This chart shows the results from our K-6 district writing assessment across a writing continuum. The results tell us a few important things. We noticed that the bulk of our K-6 writing fell between the levels of 3, 4, and 5. While these are levels aligned to the Common Core expectations for students in K-2 or K-3, we recognize that students in grades 4 through 6 should be writing in the 7 to 10 range. Of course, this assessment was given at the beginning of the year in the fall, and it was the beginning of our writing workshop implementation. Over the course of this year, students continued to develop their writing skills, and although we did not give an end-of-year assessment in writing, our teachers, our principals, and our instructional coaches have all reported the incredible gains in writing our students have made this year. We will continue to develop writing workshop in every elementary classroom next year, and we'll implement the new Lucy Calkins Common Core aligned units of study in writing. Classroom teachers will be supported by instructional coaches on the classroom floor. and as an integral component of the units of study, common assessments for each of the instructional units will provide plenty of opportunities for teachers to participate in collaborative grade-level scoring to examine student work and guide instructional decisions. With this intense focus on writing workshop in all of our elementary classrooms, we expect all of our students to become proficient writers. In reading the results from our one-on-one running record BAS assessment for students in grades kindergarten through second grade, began with our performance from the end of last year, when 79% of our K-2 students met or exceeded year-end benchmarks. This year, 82% of our students were able to meet grade-level benchmarks by the end of the year, an increase of 3 percentage points. In planning for the Common Core, we know that text complexity expectations are more rigorous for our youngest students. And so if we take our data from this year and we look at it through a Common Core lens, we notice that less of our K-2 students would be deemed proficient. This indicates that while we're making slow and steady progress toward teaching K-2 students to read, further work is necessary to meet the expectations of the Common Core. And so we know that we need to continue to develop our comprehensive literacy model, including our reading workshop. Instructional coaches will be working with classroom teachers to further implement the BAS diagnostic tools in order to get a closer look at the reading behaviors, especially of our at-risk readers. Professional development in the area of text complexity will help all teachers move students along the text complexity continuum. And we will continue to develop our skills in conferring with students about their reading progress.
Can I ask you a question?
Masters, and said, you know, these are not exactly the rigor that the Common Core is expecting of students. And so given the information they had about the Common Core, they realigned all of their benchmark expectations for their BAS system. So we as a district have not adopted the new benchmarks for the Common Core, but we know they're there because they've been published by Fountas and Pinnell. And so what we did is we just took a look at this year, kindergarten students under the old system were expected to read at a level C by the end of the year. In the newly formed benchmarks, kindergarten students will need to be able to read at a level D in the benchmark assessment system. So what we did is we looked at where our kindergartners were at the end of this year and just said, okay, how many of them would have met benchmark had the benchmark been at a level D? And then the same thing is true for first grade students. Their benchmark is increasing one level. And then in second grade, the end of your benchmark is not increasing, but the pathway to get there through second grade is. So their mid-year benchmark is a little bit higher than it was previous to this time.
Yeah, I have two questions. The first one goes back to the elementary writing assessment. I'm trying to understand this a little bit better. The small moment personal narrative, this isn't a assignment, a writing assignment, an assessment that's given K-6?
It is.
And each grade level has its own specific rubric for assessing their proficiency on this particular
This writing assessment was a little bit different than what we've done in the past. So you might be familiar with our direct writing assessment that we've given students in the past in kindergarten through 12th grade. Mm-hmm. That was an assessment with a different prompt and even different genres at every grade level. And then a grade level specific rubric where you would see, are you proficient at your grade level or basic or advanced. But this year in writing, because we were in transition, what we did is we had all of our elementary students write to the exact same prompt. And it was about a small moment personal narrative that the students chose themselves. They wrote about what's an important small moment that you've had with an adult. And then what we did is, instead of looking at like a traditional rubric where we would say it's a score of a 1, 2, 3, 4, basic, proficient, advanced, we looked at the writing continuum for narrative writing that has also, that has been published by Lucy Calkins. And Lucy has, Lucy and her group at Teachers College have put the narrative writing on a actual 12-point continuum. And that is to guide kindergarten through 8th grade writing. And so what we did is we taught our teachers about that continuum on our professional development scoring day. And then teachers read student work and tried to match. We included one of those in your Friday packet so you could kind of see. I think I included a level 3 and a 6 and a 9, I think, is what ended up in that packet there. So you can kind of get an idea. But we have exemplars at all of the different levels, both from our district and also on the Lucy Calkins website. And so the papers were leveled across that continuum. So it's a little bit of a different kind of scoring than we've ever done in the past. And it was something that was recommended to us by the Lucy Calkins Teachers College when we had them here last summer in our to do our week-long writing workshop. They we said, okay, what is a good common assessment? We're not like ready to jump in and do something like we don't know exactly what we're doing yet. Tell us what other schools have done in their first year of implementation. And they recommended this process to us, and we worked closely with them to design both the prompt we would use and then the scoring day that we would participate in with our teachers.
So this was more of a pretest kind of diagnostic tool in a way. I mean, you were going to use it to calibrate, you know, teachers as far as how they can, you know, assess their students' proficiency. And then you followed up talking with the teachers about what they perceived their progress was through the year on just writing in general, not necessarily a small moment personal narrative.
That's correct. Yes, the information that I shared with teachers and principals and instructional coaches noticing that their student writing had increased, it was anecdotal information.
And then I have one, just another question on the BAS assessment. That's a reading assessment where a teacher works with a student individually. They assess mm-hmm. each student individually in reading.
Mm-hmm. It's right. A one-on-one running record with a check for comprehension.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on, let's take a look at our elementary reading assessment for students in 3rd through 6th grade. The results from our computer adaptive SRI assessment for students in grades 3 through 6 also begin with a look at last year's data. Last year, 70% of the 3rd through 6th grade students were able to demonstrate proficiency by the end of the year. This year's data show the same percentage of students proficient or advanced when you combine them by the end of this school year. And again, there have been some slight adjustments to the Lexile levels, which SRI is a measure of Lexile, when we look at the Common Core. So putting it through a Common Core lens, we notice that a few less students would be deemed proficient or advanced if we look under the Common Core. So again, this data tells us that the same things that we needed to focus on for our kindergarten through second grade students, we would need to focus on for our older students, especially for our at-risk readers. And then in addition, to also be prepared for the assessment world that comes along with Common Core, we want all of our elementary students in...
Just specifically, too, under the old DWAS system when we had the rubric. So if you compare it to how the teachers are assessing, how they're grading it differently.
I think it starts with the emphasis that the Common Core has brought to us about writing. Writing was a subject that, and I don't want to speak for any individual teacher, but I think the general feeling was is we taught writing, and we taught writing when we asked kids to write in reading, and we ask them to write in social studies, and we ask them to write in science, possibly. But we didn't spend the focus of time overall teaching writing as a subject, writing as a content area. Common Core is helping us see that it's critical to do that, and we can't assume that kids are going to make those leaps to the next step on the continuum by writing a lot. Writing a lot is good, but they also need to be nudged by that expert teacher as to what's that next piece, what's that next skill that they need to improve their writing to the next level. That's the focus in our writing workshop. That's the focus of our instructional coaches in working with our teachers.
Excellent.
And if I could just add to that, the continuum that the assessment that we did this year in writing was unusual. The assessments that are embedded in the units of study that we'll be implementing next year are a little bit different. They will be looked at more with that grade level lens that Jim was asking about, similar to the DWA. So what does it mean to be proficient at this grade level with this genre of writing? And that'll be a different focus. Those tools weren't developed in the previous units of study, and they weren't Common Core aligned. So in implementing the Common Core aligned Lucy Calkins units next fall, it comes with a pretty comprehensive assessment and grading tools with student exemplars and lots of good things. It'll be a little different than what we did this year. This year, I think it was important for teachers to see how writers progress across a continuum. I know we all learned a lot from seeing what are those little steps that writers take as they become proficient writers into high school. All right, where are we? Here we are, reading intervention. Hang on. This is a little bit of an interesting graph because what we tried to do was to take a lot of information and condense it down into a brief overview for you tonight. And so although these three pieces of data are on the exact same graph, they're not exactly related pieces of data, and I'll try to explain that as we go. So this slide focuses on taking a closer look at our at-risk kindergarten through sixth grade readers. So what is it that we see in those students that are at risk? And the first piece of data is from our most intensive intervention, reading recovery, serving first grade students who are significantly below grade level. Of the 114 first grade students who completed a full round of reading recovery this year, 56% of those students were able to demonstrate average or better performance in their first grade classroom. That there is a lot of overlap in this data because students could be included in more than one of these groups. For instance, a reading recovery student could also be an LLI student at a different time of the year. So you have some overlap here, and it's also true with our last category. Finally, the students in grades 3 through 6 who are at risk in reading are identified in the beginning of the year to be assessed with the BAS. The BAS is not an intervention program like reading recovery and LLI, but rather a diagnostic tool for teachers to use to examine student reading behaviors. The students in this group could receive a variety of interventions, including LLI and classroom guided reading or other site-based literacy interventions. Of those 472 students assessed in the fall with the BAS, 69% of them were able to meet the grade level benchmark by the end of the year. And this slide sort of speaks to our response to intervention and instruction model in English language arts. It is beginning to develop into quite a comprehensive system for our elementary at-risk readers. And as research indicates, we notice all of the data points to, it's much more effective to identify and remediate at-risk readers as early as possible in their elementary career. The students who make the most progress are involved in intervention are our K-1, 2, third grade students. It's much more difficult in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade.
30% difference between LLI and the benchmark assessment system is pretty significant. What do you attribute the difference in those scores on?
Well, some of the students are an overlap. There's an overlap of students there. And also there is there's a wide range of students. Like some of the students just needed a little nudge. Some of them needed more than that. The level literacy numbers for our students in kindergarten, first and second grade hovered in the 40 to 50% range for level literacy. When the students were third through sixth graders involved in the level literacy intervention, that number went much lower and kind of balanced out to that 39 that you see for level literacy. As far as our benchmark assessment system, when we identify students at risk in reading, we cast a wide net. We said, if you are not proficient on the CST, and if you are not proficient on the fall SRI, or you are new to our district, we're casting a net to see if you are someone who might be at risk in reading. So we cast a pretty wide net there. And I think that you'll see that the students in the benchmark assessment system group, many of them are just like a little nudge, like they just didn't quite meet that cutoff of proficient. And so through a year's growth of reading, maybe just guided reading in the classroom, they can meet the benchmark. Whereas students participating in level literacy intervention are identified for sure at risk and need an intervention.
Non-proficient as opposed to reporting proficiency levels. Results indicate that 81% of all students scored proficient. Although we believe this impressive growth may partially be a result of our use of a new rubric, we know that our teachers' intentional instructional focus on students learning how to write counterarguments influenced these results. There still, however, remains a significant achievement gap, especially when we look at our English learners and students with disabilities. What this tells us is that we need to intentionally bridge curricular objectives and consistently implement instructional strategies that support our English learners and students with disabilities, but that also benefit all struggling learners. Our English language development common assessments are administered to English learners enrolled in ELD classes. These assessments are not yet aligned to the new Common Core state standards. Examination of the results reveals that there are several variables that account for differences in proficiency between the ELD levels. Those variables include the varying abilities of the students within each level, as well as the student mobility between the courses. However, the overall trend indicates a low percentage of students reaching proficiency on standards that are appropriate for their level of English proficiency. Therefore, our subsequent efforts need to be focused on implementing site-based formative assessments to guide instruction, as well as continuing to assess the level of rigor in the curriculum. The next two slides provide data on our two secondary reading intervention programs. READ 180 is a state-approved comprehensive program to support students reading below grade level. The expected annual Lexile growth defined by READ 180 is 50 points. As the results indicate, our middle school students are demonstrating significant gains. We continue to evaluate and adjust program delivery for our Morro Bay High School students. So for the 2013-14 school year, we are extending this intervention into our middle school special education programs. Achieve 3000 is also a state-approved reading program with content that is 100% informational text. This is the first year that we have piloted Achieve 3000 during the regular school year, with pilots lasting from 2 to 9 months per school site. For reasons of validity, we are only reporting results for schools.
They were not at, could you explain to me the low percentage of growth at Los Osos Middle School?
I think it's very important that students have access to computers because this is a computer-based program. So at Laguna Middle School, it was mainly implemented in our EL program, and they have computers and laptops available in their classroom. At San Luis Obispo High School, they have more access to computer labs, and so the staff implementing there, it was easier for them to go ahead and schedule it and take the students. At Los Osos Middle School, I think what they attempted was to try to use at first the iPads, that it doesn't work on the iPads, and then so then they ended up doing a little bit of backpedaling, trying to get into the computer lab on a consistent basis.
Which iPads are we speaking of?
The ones that they purchased for the English Learners Program. It was a pilot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we had 22 students, no, 9 students who had iPads.
Yes, but it doesn't work.
But that doesn't work for this reading program.
Right.
So at some point in time, we realized this is not effective, and or this doesn't work.
And
so then what did we do with those
the
students?
The teacher needed to adjust and be able to schedule time at a computer lab, and it's difficult sometimes at our schools once the school year gets started and everybody signs
everything's
up
been scheduled.
To go back and try to make that effort.
So essentially these kids just lost out.
They made some gains. They made the 22, but not the expected 50 that we would like to see, or higher than that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is that problem being fixed?
Yes.
It has been fixed. This won't. They'll have equal access to be able to have more realistic achievement or be able to track it and recognize the gains next year.
Dr. Pruitt and his staff are thinking about how best to implement this program at their site. And this is something that we've, you know, it's a pilot, so we learn from our pilots. The same thing happened with us with Read 180. When we implemented that and we pulled our principals and staff together and said, are we getting the most out of this program that we can? Is it functioning the way we want? Or what do we need to change? What are the obstacles? And again, this program has been in place for 3 to 9 months, I think, at Los Osos Middle School. It was 6 months. And so they need some time to adjust the program.
So to conclude, in English Language Arts, we had numerous shifts happen this year. Elementary students were engaged in writing to our growth and readiness for Common Core in English Language Arts and ELD. In elementary, we have full implementation of the writing units of study that include the 3 text types, narrative, argumentative, and informational. Teachers will participate in site-based professional development led by our instructional coaches to focus on the implementation of these units as well as work in the area of reading text complexity. In secondary, we will revise our ELD and ELA common assessments and continue to increase the focus on informational text. We will utilize the SBAC practice and interim assessments as they become available to better align our teaching practices to the more rigorous standards. And finally, we will continue to expand our Common Core resources for all teachers through our Common Core State Standard website. So let's move on to math assessments. Our focus this past year in math has been to emphasize the 8 mathematical practices while providing lots of opportunities for our students to experience high-level performance tasks typical of the Common Core expectations. Using visual modeling in teaching and learning was a major focus of our professional development, thus raising our expectations for students to be able to use visual models again. I can't say enough about the impact of our scoring days. There was an incredible collaborative spirit as we looked at how our students were able to demonstrate their mathematical thinking through pictures, numbers, and words. In elementary, students in 3rd through 6th grade participated in a computer adaptive assessment similar to what the SBAC will look like. The focus for performance assessments was number sense and fractions, because we know our students must have a deep understanding of these critical skills if they will be successful in Algebra 1. For secondary, the major focus in math course content, along with the 8 mathematical practices, provided the focus for our professional development and scoring days. One of the major changes was the reconstruction of the traditional Algebra 1 course into two courses, an 8th grade Common Core class and a high school Algebra 1 Common Core course. We'll start with our elementary math assessments, Starla.
All right, our common assessments in math were newly implemented this year, so we cannot provide a year-to-year comparison as we did in English Language Arts. The data that I'm sharing is a comparison between the beginning and end of this school year. Students in transitional kindergarten through second grade were assessed this year in the area of number sense through a one-on-one interview or a constructed response assessment. And at the beginning of the year, 31% of the students were proficient on some of the critical number sense standards. By the end of the year, 71% of our transitional kindergarten through grade two students were able to demonstrate proficiency on these same Common Core standards. The data indicates that we need to continue to focus on teaching these foundational standards to a very deep conceptual level. We'll be developing math lead teachers at every site to support mathematics instruction and math. It provided teachers with a general overview of their students on a mathematics continuum, measuring student growth over time. The SMI also identified students who were possibly at risk in mathematics and provided a focus for intervention.
So the test that was given at the in the fall assessed where they should have been in the fall, right? And then the test in the spring assessed where they should have been in the spring after instruction. Or did the I'm just assuming the test in the fall didn't test what they should know in the spring, right?
Actually, the SMI as a computer adaptive test tests students on a continuum. So the proficiency performance levels are year-end proficiencies for students. So the fall proficiency levels were not where they should have been in the fall, but where they should have been for the end of that grade level. So at the beginning of the year, we had 46% of our students demonstrating proficiency on their own grade level standards. That number then grew to the second bar graph that you see there by the end of the year to 78%. And I think that the power of this really is to kind of look, well, first of all, you want to know, it's for differentiation. You want to know those students who are already on their way. So you can look at those top-level advanced students and see maybe what they need next in their year of math. But also you can focus on those lowest students, those ones that are possibly at risk in mathematics, and then begin to provide some of the intervention and remediation that they may need in order to bump up and achieve those grade-level standards. And again, we're interested at this point in using this tool to measure that growth over time. So where were they at the beginning of second grade? and then where were they at the end, and then where were they at the end of third grade, and where were they at the end of fifth grade, so that we can see students are moving along that mathematics continuum over time. And as a new assessment, and our first year of using it, we're interested to see next year how that information plays out and if this is a valuable tool for our teachers. It may become replaced with some of the tools that we see coming out of SBAC, if that is a tool that can track progress over time and growth on a continuum. We would be more interested in using that as a tool. Okay, the next part of data kind of zeroes in on something. So while the SMI gives us a broad view of students in third through sixth grade, our district common assessment in fractions allowed us to zoom in on a topic essential to success in Algebra 1. Students in grades 2 through 6 participated in a performance task aligned to an essential fraction standard for their grade level. These assessments were designed to support the instructional shifts needed to teach deep conceptual understanding. In the fall, 10% of our students were able to demonstrate proficiency on the performance tasks. By the end of the year, 30% were proficient on similar tasks. As teachers participated in scoring professional development, they noticed that students were rising to 43% by the end of the year. And while we can see that growth was made by our students, it's clear that our work to understand the Common Core expectations in fractions, develop instructional strategies to teach fractions at that deep conceptual level, and our students' ability to demonstrate their understanding on a performance task assessment still needs our focused attention. As I noted with the TK2 math data, next year we'll continue our common assessment focus on fractions. We'll develop math lead teachers at each site and engage in classroom coaching with our math consultants. And then in addition, for our students in grades 3 through 6, we will ensure that all students have an opportunity to access the SBAC pilot and our practice and interim assessments. The last piece of math data for elementary that I'd like to share is from our research-based math intervention program called Do the Math. This year, we were able to have 41 students complete or nearly complete a module from the Do the Math program. These 41 students demonstrated significant growth at the conclusion of their intervention. This year, two of our elementary schools were able to provide this intervention for at-risk students in math. And as resources become available, we're interested in supporting a district-wide implementation of this intervention for students at risk in math at each of our elementary sites.
In the area of mathematics, this is also the second year we have administered these common assessments in all math classes from Math Plus to Algebra 2. Although all of our student groups demonstrated growth, it remains evident that the vast majority of our students are not prepared to perform successfully on complex, multi-step math tasks. In order to make the improvement necessary, we need to implement revised curricular units and intensify our district and on-site professional development, as well as continue to provide instructional resources that emphasize the critical thinking and problem-solving aspects of the standards for mathematical practice. Our secondary math interventions include three scholastic programs that serve to support both the conceptual understanding and the fluency demands of the Common Core State Standards. That's these three right here. In addition, we have begun to pilot the ALEX program, which is a computer program that adapts to the individual learning needs of each student. As we move forward, we continue to monitor the effectiveness of these interventions. And I think it's important to know that at the secondary level, students come with a greater variety of holes in their understanding. And so they require programs and implementation of programs that are even more individualized to their need, fractions. And so you can see the average scores when we see 88 to 94%. The students who are working in those programs are actually achieving a promising level of mastery. And Alex, again, we just began the last few months of school. But again, this really helps our students, for example, at Pacific Beach High School, who many times, although they receive direct instruction and even more so than they have in the past, there are times when they have lessons that are meant to be specifically tailored to their needs and where they are. And so this program, I know the teacher is very much valuing the fact that this program provides an assessment and then identifies the areas of need for each student. Their pie chart of their work looks very different from their neighbors so that they can work on those skills.
Let me ask a question. So looking at the assessments and seeing that the majority of the students in all these categories fall in the below standard, and you mentioned holes. Are we doing anything to figure out when these holes start opening up in front of these children? Are we looking to see, because Ms. Batistic talked about this achievement that we're recognizing at the very early grades, and then by the time they get to the secondary level, we have this. So what are we doing to monitor when is this happening? What do we need to improve on? We're going off the rails at some point. This is not good. These are not good outcomes, I don't believe. So how are we approaching this challenge to determine how we can maintain these the achievements that we find in the early years? How do we maintain that or start determining where the problems are coming up or where we're losing kids and then coming up with how to address all that?
To follow up on that metaphor of going off the rails, I think we have various trains going down the track.
Yeah, and that's
trying to make a change in elementary by identifying earlier and earlier what are those gaps and providing interventions. We have another train for secondary students who haven't had any exposure to those improved interventions that we're now putting in place. And that third train is Common Core. It's saying, yes, the train's going this way, and by the way, here's the level of attainment for everyone.
This is scary.
Yes, it is. Here's the level of attainment we need for everyone, recognizing that we have some, you know, our kids are in a continuum, some very far behind and some closer. But we know that the difference is the instruction that goes on in the classroom.
Bring them up to speed.
Except that we're getting smarter about our interventions, and that ties back to instruction. We are not trying to provide the same instruction for all of those students, hence those intervention programs that more clearly target what every student needs.
And those are occurring at all levels now. We're catching students as they, you know, before they're, we're snatching them up as fast as we can before they fall into those holes?
Although elementary didn't share their Fast Math and Fraction Nation results, they do implement both those programs at the 4th through 6th or 3rd through 6th level.
Okay. Thank you.
But again, I would just add to that, it's not a secondary problem. It starts when children come to our schools. Yes, and I think we're just starting to do a better job of paying attention to math and paying attention to what happens in the classroom and what we as teachers do with students. And as we really make a dramatic shift in the careers, the lives of our teachers in San Luis Coastal, who are really changing their skill set, I do believe we're going to see that improvement. But we are pushing our teachers as hard and as fast as we possibly can, because we want this to sink in. We want them to hang with us while we do this dramatic shift in instruction. Okay.
And I just want to add one thing. I don't think it's scary.
No, it's
exciting. I actually see it as in a different emotion. The emotion or the feeling that I would like to express is that this is 90% of the battle is awareness. So we've made ourselves aware of the data. We've identified, now that we understand what's happening, and we see that we have a number of kids who are struggling especially when they hit secondary, middle, and high school. Now what we've done is we've aggressively, over the last 2 years, implemented these very specific, as Dr. Delkiskamp said, fine-tuned interventions for students to meet them where they are. And the fact that Common Core is coming, the fact that mm-hmm. we're aware of that and we're developing our capacity through TeachScape and our collaboratively designed teacher evaluation tool, everyone in this organization is heightened in our awareness as to the need. Student achievement, and specifically achievement gap, will take years, in fact, for our organization to realize our own potential and for the students to then get behind that. I suspect that we're going to begin to see dramatic improvements over the next couple of years as the professional training and all those things we're doing begin to blend and merge. You bring up a really important point, Ms. Schaffer, when you talk about what do we do, how do we know when those kids, how big the holes are, and what do we do about it? Well, that's really what we've been doing since the board adopted those initiatives. That really is our board's awareness. And
teachers were asked to help students learn how to make sense of very difficult problems and persevere in solving them. Our common assessments were deliberately designed to create a disequilibrium between the way we used to teach math to the more rigorous thinking curriculum. Collaborative scoring of performance tasks deepened our understanding of the rigorous math we are teaching to our students. By unpacking the Common Core standards, we were able to map out where we're going at each grade level to provide powerful math instruction. And finally, studying the new assessment practices with the released test items has been a powerful tool to increase understanding and build our implementation plan. So next steps, where are we going? Our next steps for 13-14 are bold. We've developed year-long scope and sequences for teaching the Common Core standards. Teacher leaders are working this summer to develop units of study for each grade level and secondary math class. We will continue to use those SBAC practice assessments and the interim tests when they become available to help gauge our success. Our partnership with the Silicon Valley Math Initiative will allow us to continue to learn from leaders in math reform and collaborate with other districts both in and out of California. Instructional coaching on best practices will be an ongoing process in San Luis Coastal classrooms with the support of our math consultants. We're going to continue to research resources literally from around the country to share with our teachers on Common Core website. And finally, we'll continue to provide collaborative scoring of performance tasks as our professional development model.
So in summary, 2 years ago, we began a journey towards an intentional focus on teaching and learning by implementing our district initiatives for student success. We have founded our efforts to improve teaching and learning and our continued professional development and new teacher evaluation system. As we end this year, we recognize the depth of our challenge to implement the Common Core standards, as well as the even greater challenges some of our students face. And yet, we're ready. We're ready to dive into this work with the vigor and perseverance our students deserve, using our newfound perspectives to embrace the future. And so our motto for 2013-14 is, everybody in the pool.
Okay, thank you. Is anybody in the public like to speak to this issue? Get that thing right.
Hello, my name is Judy Neuhauser. I'm a third grade teacher at Monarch Grove. I'd just like to make a couple comments. I am a teacher that has been really enthusiastic about using the model of teaching where you take a child from where they are and you work from there and take them on, find out where their disequilibriums, where their misunderstandings are, and teach from those misunderstandings. And I've always done rather than what comes from the top down. And one of the things I think is missing in this conversation is what kind of time support we need to develop these kinds of things. Because what's happened at the primary is we're losing time support. When we went to the TCT, while it's valuable, it also took time away from our classroom preparation. When we lost our music, it took time away from our classroom preparation. And that's a concern to me, because at some point you have to start taking things back off our plate rather than continuing to put on the plate, or you have to somehow make more time for us to be able to work through what's on that plate. Second comment has to do with statistics and data. And I know I've had some conversations with Chris, and he keeps asking me, why don't I say it at the board? And it's because I only have 3 minutes. And there's not a lot to say. But what I want to say is the calibration issues in terms of the writing, and in terms of the BAS also, they're subjective. And although they come out as numbers, they're not really numbers. They're subjective categories. And I've done enough science. I was a practicing field botanist for 12, 15 years. My husband is a field biologist and data analyst. That's what he does professionally for the last 30 years. And when we have conversations about things, what he says is you can't take averages on the subjective kinds of categories, because they're not really numbers. And so what you also have to do is realize that you've got sort of a plus or minus one category, whether it's when you start getting into that basic, is it basic, is it proficient, is it basic, is it proficient? When you get down to those lines, it's not really clear. And so when we get these beautiful graphics and charts with that hard line between basic and proficient, you have to look at that with a little bit of skepticism, of saying, really, what is that? And when you get down into the very low, then yes, you can say those guys are not proficient. But when you're in that middle section, it gets a little harder. The other thing I really wanted to talk about had to do with the SRI. And we're using the SRI at 3.6 for proficiency. I know. I will try and get really quick on this.
Okay.
The SRI is a measure of sentence complexity. This is the metrics that are used in the computer program. It's sentence complexity and vocabulary. And what I realized when I taught sixth grade at Pacheco in Spanish and took those SRIs in Spanish is I would read the text. I had perfect understanding of what the text was. I could explain it, I could describe it, but when I got to the answers, I didn't know the vocabulary for any of the answers. And I think that's what happens for especially our EL kids in the SRI. So using the SRI as a can they understand reading complexity is not necessarily a good metric for it, because what's really happening to some of them is that it's a vocabulary issue. And yes, vocabulary is part of reading, but it's not the only part. So I would just like to see some of the data shown with a little bit of, I don't know where to say it. Where can you actually get into the complexity of data stuff that's not a 3-minute presentation. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? Bring it back to the board. Any questions or comments on this agenda item? Mark?
If I can, I don't know if Mark does or not. Okay.
Walt, I do have just one comment and a question, if I'm.
Go ahead.
Walter?
Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Sorry, little new technology here. I'm very impressed with everything that I heard, and I'm very excited about the improvements that are being shown. And so the question goes to, we may have a unique opportunity here because we have the transitional kindergarten students and the data that we have on them. And we've said that the traditional kindergarten will be a benefit to us as they progress through the grades. And what I'm wondering is if we can track them specifically as a cohort as they go through and track that concept of the benefit of the transitional kindergarten.
I can speak to that. Mr. Buckman, I was charged by our superintendent to do just that, not only for our TK classes, but for our preschool classes, and we are doing that, and we will have information at some point for you.
That's great. Thank you very much.
A couple of things I would just like to comment on. Judy and I had a long conversation, and I really appreciate the time you gave me, Judy. One thing I'm aware of about the BAS is that it's really time consuming. 45 minutes per student. And I understand that teachers are actually taking personal necessity days in order to get their classes fully tested. And it may be valuable, but it's also pretty time intensive, and I wanted to bring that up. I appreciate the things you brought forward because we're not seeing apples versus oranges this time, which I think is great. I think we're starting to see more of that. And then the other thing I just want to emphasize is and make sure that we're getting this information back to the staff as immediately would be nice so that it can help guide their instruction, because what I'm worried about is we're doing these assessments and then 2, 3, 4 weeks later, a month later, the teachers are getting that back. Well, that train's left the station if we're going to use railroad analogies. So I just want to make sure those things are important. Thank you. Or those are important to me. I want to make sure that we're working on those.
Any other questions or comments? We'll be in recess for 5 minutes. Please make it 5 minutes. Okay, we are back. Mark, you with us? Hey, Mark. Just say hi.
Okay, I have to keep on muting my microphone. Thanks.
All right, I was able to take a short break, take my anti-grump pill. It should kick in any minute now. So hopefully my poker face concealed my fatigue. And so what we are considering for the board's edification...
District actions and budget information for 2013-14. We believe it reflects the board's previous adoption of the Common Core State Standards and a call for all stakeholders to jump into the pool next year with a focus on teaching and learning the Common Core State Standards, as well as the assessments that reflect the more rigorous expectations of the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium. It is a comprehensive product of the work and input from various departments. We're happy to answer any questions you may have regarding the LEA plan or the addendum, and then would like to request your approval.
That was very succinct.
I thought you'd appreciate that.
Just for the sake of clarity, the primary changes to the plan versus last year and over the last 2 years has been our adoption of the student success initiatives and our work toward preparing for the Common Core.
That is absolutely correct. The first 30 pages of the entire LEA plan, not to be confused with the many pages of the entire plan, actually the addendum is what's the most current. I mean, we update the plan, but the addendum are the SMART goals, are the 10 initiatives, are the real action of what's happening next year.
Excellent. So we'll first of all go to the public if they'd like to speak to this issue. And I don't see anyone, so we'll bring it back to the board and board member questions and comments. And don't be afraid. I'm not going to hit anyone with a chair or anything to ask a question. Especially you. You're safe. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Just can't hit me with a chair, but, you know, that tongue can get there. I have just a couple of comments. And Amy... as I was going through this, I noticed that you continued to budget the summer school program and wondered if there was a rationale or a hope there.
Well, there's certainly a hope. Mr. Buckman, nice to almost see you tonight. The board approved through the cut to take summer school out of the 2012-13 budget. We did put it back in for the 13 budget, but again, it will certainly be the board's decision as to whether we have summer school in the following summer.
And I'm wondering, the reason you put it back in, is there a value that you see in it?
There's a huge value to summer school, especially for our most at-risk learners. We met, Rita and I met with our DLAC last night, and I can tell you they are really sad about the fact that we don't have this great intervention program happening during the summer, not only for children below grade level, but children who are learning English as their second language and may not have English models at home to keep that practice up during the summer. So I can't overemphasize the value of summer school.
Well, that sounds encouraging. I was also interested to see within the, I can't remember if it was the addendum or the report, that there was a table on truancy, and it looked like we had an initial bump after the board had stressed the value and the desire to have more students in their seat.
Back up 2% to 27%, so I think we did see a leveling out the second year. I can't speak to what next steps might be and would defer that to student support services.
Okay, and so just to add on to that, and I guess this might be for you, Dr. Prater, and I'm not sure how we're transitioning into this change from basic aid and into some maybe more amorphous funding, but as we transition, it seems to me that the truancy rate may be more important to our funding. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah. I think the direction of the LCFF model could likely lead us into a revenue limit state where our funding is reliant on students in their seats. Regardless of that, our focus remains the same. Regardless of the funding, our focus is shifting the culture. And the culture of high expectations means we need kids in their seats every day. So in speaking with Mr. Dowler as well the other day about this issue, we're in complete alignment with maintaining that focus, if not increasing that focus. But given all that we're doing, I want you to know that that we're after changing the culture, which in the event we lose our basic aid funding and fall into revenue limit, then we'll be in really good shape because we're working on shifting the culture to making being in the seat every day a high value. And you do that through great teaching and engaging learning. That's what you do. That's how you do it.
Okay. Hey, Walter, I have just one more question, okay?
Yes.
Okay. So as I look at this, this is maybe just more a compliment. I just wanted to thank staff. This is an amazing effort to make that shift from NCLB to Common Core, and it runs throughout the LEA, and I truly appreciated it.
Thank you. It was a group effort.
Thank you, Mark. And I would assume that as we sharpen our focus on attendance and tardiness, that we probably will see some fluctuation in the data. In fact, we'll probably see an increase in some of those categories, and the attention hopefully will discourage the behavior, and we will start to see a decrease.
I would agree. There is nothing like an engaging teacher to get a kid out of bed in the morning and wanting to go to school.
And engaged parents and Absolutely. Family members help too.
Yep.
Thank you. Any other questions for Remy? Go ahead.
I think as we become more aware of it and more consistent in our approach to truancy and what truancy means on each campus, then yes, I think exactly what you're saying is true. I just like to go ahead and then move approval of item 8.02.
Is there anyone in the public who would like to speak to this item? Did I already ask that? Okay. I'm asking again. Anybody want to speak to this item? Bring it back to the board. We have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by the chair. Any further discussion or questions? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Is it past 6-1 or 6 with a Mark, did you vote?
Development for teachers and administrators. This application addresses 3 years of funding, last year, this year, and the next. The various sections include information about program assurances, private school participation, use of funds, and student data to guide our distribution of funds. Both of our Title I and English Learner Advisory Committees have reviewed and approved this application. And so pending any questions or feedback you may have, we're seeking board approval of our district's consolidated application.
Thank you, Reed. Is there anyone in the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board and board member questions. Marilyn?
I would like to move approval of 8.03, please.
I'd like to second that.
All right. It's a motion by Mrs. Roger, a second by Mr. Unger, or Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. That was a wonderful compliment. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, you'd look great in a gray beard. And is there any further discussions or questions or anything? Okay. All in favor? Aye. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed. Passes 7-0. Thank you, Rita. And next, we have the approval of the Educational Technology Plan. Mrs. Simoes.
Good evening. Hi. My name is Amelia Simoes, and I'm the district's IS&T, Information Services and Technology Director. And this evening, I'd like to present a brief overview of the new the draft technology plan. I'm going to back it up a little. Oh. No, it's not. That's okay. I'll back it up. There we go. Okay. This draft plan outlines how technology will be used in classrooms and for administrative purposes. Instructional technology will help educators and students reimagine the way they teach and learn. Personal computers and mobile devices are a way of life for our kids today and will continue to play a major role in preparing them for the future. With that in mind, this plan has been developed to set current and future direction for technology in our district and also to ensure that we will continue to qualify for federal E-rate funding and the Enhancing Education Through Technology grants that we've benefited from in years past. This plan also describes the process for integrating technology into the curriculum with the new California Common Core standards. The method for review and revision of this plan is outlined to ensure continuous progress and alignment with the district's student success initiatives. This draft plan was written by a wide range of volunteer stakeholders, which included teachers, students, parents, administrators, IT, classified staff, and IT industry business leaders from our local community. Include a K-12 scope of sequence chart with important 21st century skills. Now, one would think that with all the tools our kids have today at their disposal, that they would be completely tech savvy. The reality is that most are not savvy with many skills that are needed for the job market. The K-12 scope and sequence will integrate with the California Common Core standards to ensure that, beginning in the primary grades, our students will have the skills necessary to be successful in college and in their future careers by the time they graduate. Skills covered include the areas of creativity and innovation, communication and collaboration, research and information fluency, critical thinking, problem solving and decision making, digital citizenship, and technology operations and concepts. You'll find a complete copy of the scope and sequence in your draft plan. Do teachers have all the information they need at their fingertips to understand how our students think and learn? This is a really important question that can drive critical strategies for implementing technology, and professional development is key to effectively using technology. The PD goals listed in the plan were based upon the state's EdTech profile survey that teachers and administrators are asked to complete annually. According to the most recent assessment, which covers Standard 9 using technology in the classroom, 18% of our certificated staff in our district consider themselves to be proficient, 17% consider themselves to be intermediate in their skills, 51 consider themselves to be beginners, and 14 weren't sure or wasn't applicable. In terms of using technology to support student learning, 8% of teachers felt they were proficient, 14% intermediate, 39% beginners, and again 13% not applicable. While we must ensure that every learner's device is working in a seamless way across a robust network, the really important issues are about learning and not the specific tools. Just shifting our perspective to look at the quality of the information flowing through the wires and the boxes can lead to an improvement in how we invest in technology. Ensuring that teachers and students have the right information at the right time is most important than the type of device itself. In the past, students and staff have had access to at least one networked multimedia workstation, which was a PC or a laptop. So now the draft plan includes a mobile device in every classroom as an option. That these devices be 5 years old or less, and that computer labs will be maintained with computers that are 5 years old or less. The five-year mark is definitely pushing it. It should be more like 3 to 4 if we want to be on the cutting edge. But the reality of school budgets in California and really across the nation was taken into account so that we could make a realistic plan for our school district for the next five-year replacement cycle. Other examples of goals in this section of the plan include that the district will research the district's EdTech committee, who will recommend any updates and changes to the plan. If anything major changes, it will be brought to the board. On average, the district spends about $2.5 million a year on technology. This includes salary for tech-related personnel in both the IST department and the ISLA department. This list of established funding sources is generally what has been utilized in the past to fund technology needs, and it includes an annual replacement plan fund, or a sinking fund, as we've discussed in the past. In conclusion, this tech plan provides a guide for the next 5 years as the district renews its commitment to engaging students in the effective use of technology while meeting E-rate funding requirements and ensuring that we maintain our eligibility for state and federal technology grants. I'll be glad to take any questions, and once we finish our questions, I'm going to respectfully request that the board approve this plan so it can be submitted to the State Department of Education for their final review and approval.
Thank you, Amelia. Is there anyone in the public who would like to speak to this item? See, come on up, Judy. We're going to have to hold you to the timer this time.
I will hold you to the time limit. You know, I had a chance to review this the other night when I went on the website, and I really love the fact that we're going to be doing projects with the kids. I'm a little bit concerned about the devil in the details type of thing. Right now I have a 40-minute time schedule per week in the computer lab, and it says I'm going to be hopefully doing, kids will be producing one thing per trimester, and that seems a little overly ambitious, but I'm hoping there's enough flexibility in the plan to be able to work with the physical realities of what actually is there. The other concern I have, I work with third graders, and they are tiny when they come in, and it looks like we're going to be integrating the first and the second graders in too. The computer lab has to serve then the first grade through the sixth grade, and there's a huge difference in size. I had a long-standing conversation and tried to work with my librarian ed tech on how do we make it work for the third graders, because they're sitting on chairs where their feet are dangling. Well, feet dangling for an hour is not good. And then they get their hands up, you know, and if you try putting your hands up like this, because this is where the desk level is, and then they have to turn their hands like this to get into the proper position. And you know what? That also is not sustainable. So somehow, if we're going to be meeting all these requirements, we're either going to be teaching kids to sit wrong at the computer because they can't sit properly. I know it's not, but I'm saying these are the issues that come in. These are the devil in the detail issues that we're going to have to figure out. How do we deal with the not just the computers, but the furniture in the computer lab, unless we're going to go to mobile things that can get taken back to the classroom where the chairs and desks are matched to the height of the kids. So I just want to put that out there, that may be one other conversation that has to happen in the district as to how do we, that one size definitely does not fit all. Thanks.
Let me ask you a real quick question.
Sitting there with their feet up on the chairs and they're slouching and they're trying to get their hands in the right direction. They don't fit. Okay. So, thanks.
Thank you, Judy. And anyone else like to speak to the board on this item? Okay. We'll bring it back. And questions? Catherine?
More of a comment than a question. I would just like to thank Mrs. Samoas for her work on this plan and her work over time on this, on our move toward technology in the district and your contribution, and I want to thank you for that.
You're very welcome, and thank you for the opportunities I've had the past few years, and it's been a team effort for sure. A lot of people have done a great job, so thank you.
And I would like to join Catherine in those remarks, and I think the board would as well. And also, we heard from your team over the past couple of months, and
thank you.
And I understand their both affection and support of you. And I too felt like you made technology not only accessible but friendly to old timers like me.
Well, you've all done a great job adapting this year to the paperless board meetings. I'm very impressed.
It's great. It was a bit of a struggle. Rust helped out a lot.
Yeah.
But one question is, Can we, unless we take action on the sinking fund in the next budget cycle or two, are we going to be able to maintain the five-year maximum age on our technology?
Well, I think that the plan is a vision and a goal, and certainly the plan can't predict what the state's going to provide in terms of funding, so we realize that, but the plan has outlined a five-year budget for not only replacing computers or whatever devices next year, whether it's adding tablets, but as well as introducing the wireless, replacing the infrastructure, and doing the Wi-Fi. So it's built into that budget. We've got the numbers if you want to start looking at that for next year.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you, Amelia.
You're welcome. Thank you again.
Our best to your mother.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. We will move on to... we need approval. Thank you, Ellen.
To accept the technology plan as submitted by Ms. Samoas.
All right. We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Questenberry. Any further discussions or questions? Mark, are you okay?
We're good.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Passes 7-0. Thank you. Here's an example of technology in use right here. You've never looked so good, Mark.
I don't know if that's a compliment or not, Paul.
I didn't mean that you look better long distance. I think you look good on camera. We'll move on to
photogenic.
Exactly. To 8.05, approval of a letter in support of Chris Ungar's nomination for vice president of CSBA. Who would like to discuss that? Should we read it? All right.
You don't have to. Just embarrass the heck out of me.
Well, that's what the plan is. So read it, Jim.
Our district has continued its membership with CSBA, participated in conferences, and is proud to have had board members serve as both regional and state delegates. Mr. Unger is just such a board member. He has served as a regional delegate for several terms and is currently a state delegate. He served us as committee chair for the annual education conference a couple of years ago. Throughout these years, Mr. Unger has demonstrated his ability to maintain his position on our school board with integrity, attention to duty, and attention to duty while also performing his CSBA duties fully. A voracious reader, Mr. Unger shares with his colleagues on the school board and his fellow CSB officers and delegates much of the information he gathers from innumerable sources. His search for knowledge is unrelenting. Mr. Unger possesses a broad understanding of public education and the underlying machine that is the California legislature. He is both a leader and a doer. He should be elected as vice president of the CSBA. All districts in the state will benefit from his talent, from his talents and leadership. Sincerely,
me?
Walter J. Millar.
Do we have to take a action on this, or we do? Okay. Oh, Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, as someone that has seen Chris as the regional director and seen him up at the state level, I have to tell you that he's head and shoulders above those folks that he is leading and working with, and he's going to make a great vice president. There's no doubt in my mind he'll get it. So I would be proud to make the motion to approve this letter.
Thank you, Mark, and I'm going to take the point of personal privilege to second that, having had the opportunity to serve on the school board with Chris for going on 13 and a half years. I have seen firsthand not only the dedication and commitment that's outlined in this letter, but so much more of Chris's service. And I believe that Chris will help keep CSBA relevant and make it more relevant in these challenging times and hopefully in the improving times that we hope lie ahead for the district. So any further comments or questions?
I have a brief comment, and this is not to diminish from the words of the letter at all, which I wholeheartedly support. But I noticed that the introduction is, "Dear Sirs." Are there only sirs on CSBA? I would request that we acknowledge that there are women also as participating and active in CSBA. Thank you.
Mrs. Holmes, we can make that edit before we sign the actual letter. All right. Go ahead, Chris. You bet.
After 13 years, we can finally share. I just wanted to thank the board for its support. I'll find out in September. In September, I go before the nominating committee, and at that point, they interview me, and then we'll see if they.
There you go. Passes 6-0 with one abstention. The shy Mr. Unger wouldn't vote for himself. Okay, we'll take care of the correction to the letter, and we'll get it out to CSBA. Thanks, Chris, for being willing to do that. And next, we have item 8.06. This is an appointment of a board subcommittee to help out in the interview for Assistant Superintendent for Business Services. Dr. Prater, would you outline kind of the timeline and the commitments so we can assess board members' availability to participate in this?
Yes, I'll do the best I can.
Thanks for coming, Judy.
The first round of interviews are tomorrow, and we had 58 applicants from across the state. We narrowed it down to 10 high-quality candidates for the position of Assistant Superintendent of Business Services, and so tomorrow, because we were only able to narrow it down to 10. And that was the most we could do. And it's a long day. It's two panels, two committees, a technical and a community panel, 7:15 a.m. to 6 p.m. And that's tomorrow. That doesn't involve the board. And then tomorrow night, when that's all over, Mr. Robinette and I sit with the school services representative, and we will narrow it down to two, perhaps three, of the best candidates. And from that, the following week, I believe it's July 2nd, which is, I believe, Tuesday, July 2nd, we will have the final round, which I'm requesting three board members to accompany me, and myself and Mr. Robinette, for the final interview and selection. And it's an important, as you know, a very important role, and we're looking for total commitment. And I would expect a 4 to 5 hour commitment.
And when you say it's going to be here, the interview panel?
Correct.
Here. Okay.
And we'll start in the morning, and so it'll be Tuesday, July 2nd, probably starting at 9 a.m.
Okay. So let's start with any board members who have schedule conflicts or can't participate.
I'm gone.
Okay, Mr. Unger's off. Mark, are you you're going to be able to participate on July 2nd in the panel?
You know, I can't guarantee that I can.
Okay.
So I'll pass.
Okay. Anyone else have any scheduling issues? If we keep going, we'll have the three board members. It'll be a piece of cake.
I just would like to say that I had an opportunity to speak with one of my fellow board members today, and she expressed an interest, so I would like to nominate Marilyn Roger.
All right, so at least as far as who's not available is Chris and Mark. Okay. Nomination for Marilyn?
I'll second the nomination.
Okay. I guess we do this one at a time. All right.
Do we need nominations or just...
Well, I don't know. We talked about this at the clerks, whether to do it by consensus or the ugly individual voting thing. And I'm open to either one. I leave it up to the will of the board.
I'd be interested in serving up.
Yeah,
okay.
You okay?
So
all right. Hey, that was easy. Mark, you're okay?
Yes,
with the three?
Wonderful. Yep, two women and one man.
All right, allegedly. All right, there you go. So that was easy. I was actually dreading this kind of these things that can get so goofy. All right, then we have our three members, and thank you all for your willingness to do that, and I appreciate it. And also thank you all who those of you who were willing to at least be considered for it. So we will move on to item 8.07, is the approval of a approval to pay board member salary for permissible absence. And who are we considering here? Marilyn.
I will speak to this item.
Go ahead, Mrs. Holmes, by all means.
We have two requests for your consideration. One is for Marilyn's absence, and let me see if I open this, it'll say the particular meeting. From the meeting of May 21st for having been ill, and Mr. Buckman, who is out of town for medical reasons and missed the meeting of May 21st, June 11th. And the form says tonight, but since we've managed to bring him in by Skype, we don't need to do that. So he's asking for sick leave for those two absences. And the Ed Code requires that you take specific action to either approve or deny these requests so that they would be paid rather than docked for their absence. And we put it on discussion so that the affected board members can abstain from the vote.
And do we handle each board member separately?
I think a single vote is fine.
Okay.
Unless there's going to be a different result.
I will move approval of the three absences. Thank you, Jim, for board member pay as a permissible absence.
I'll second that.
Okay. Any motion by the chair, second by Mr. Unger. Any discussion or questions? Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Abstain?
I'm abstaining.
And Mark's abstaining?
Yes, please.
Okay. So it passes 5-0 with two abstentions. All right.
And, Mark, I'll call you later. We'll take that trip to the Bahamas as soon as we get that payment.
I'm all packed.
All right. Action consent items. Let me know which ones you want pulled, if any. 9.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.02, approval of agreement with California School Employees Association regarding the effects of the 2013-14 layoffs on bargaining unit positions. 9.03, acceptance of donations. 9.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 9.05, purchase orders. 9.06, approval of field study trip. 9.07, approval to submit 2013-2014 Morro Bay High School Agricultural Vocational Education Incentive Grant. 9.08, approval to submit 2013-2014 San Luis Obispo High School Agricultural Vocation Education Incentive Grant.
Excuse me, Mr. President. Could I go backtrack a little bit and pull 9.06?
Yes, sir. We'll pull that. Let's see.
Through
9.08. Oh, we have an 09.
Did someone pull the pizza?
No.
Mm-mm. Oh, beg your pardon. Through 9.09.
Bought one would have pulled a pizza, but bless her heart. Okay. Second, anybody?
I'll second it.
Okay. So we have a motion approving items 9.01 through 9.05, 9.07 through 9.09. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All in favor? Aye. Mike? Mark?
All yes, sir.
Aye. Did I get an aye?
Yes, please.
Okay. Opposed? Passes 7-0. Jim?
Yeah, mine's not so specific to the cheerleading camp in Santa Barbara or the ASB leadership in Rancho El Choro. It's just a question about field trips in general. And when a group or a teacher plans a field trip, is there a process by which they can kind of call transportation and get an estimate about what that would cost them, and are there alternate ways for them to utilize transportation, as you know, vans as opposed to school buses and so forth, for them to find the least expensive way to do this? I just had this conversation last night with an elementary teacher about a $450 field trip to the Morro Bay Natural History Museum from Los Osos. So he was completely unaware that there was some kind of procedure, and if we could get that information out, and if they could be apprised of what the situation is and what their options are.
Sure. It's part of the whole field trip protocol that they can check with transportation, find out the cost of a yellow bus, find out the cost of a charter bus, which we discourage. And in the case of these two, these are vans and you know, parent transportation in particular on these two field trips. I know they're not taking buses for this trip. It's all provided as part of the field trip form. And transportation is one of the most expensive parts of field trips. And even utilizing our own buses is very expensive.
Thank you. I'll move approval of item 9.06, the approval of the field study trip request.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Questenberry and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
There you go. And opposed? Passes 7-0. And the next item is the advanced agenda. But before we do that, Kim, can we reschedule closed session? Oh, good. Okay. Oh, I forget that you actually work over there doing stuff.
Okay, so this presents a couple of interesting things. Before I do this, I want to stop because this nice lady came into our meeting late. I think perhaps she didn't realize how early we started.
Oh.
So we might have a public comment request.
Sure. Happy to.
Is this okay?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
By all means.
Kim, I really appreciate it. Good evening. My name is Margaret Gordon. I have an 11th grader at San Luis High School and dropped on the students midterm right after Thanksgiving. Okay, so whoever did it, I don't know if it was Mr. O'Connor or what happened or how it happened, it was poorly implemented. So my daughter came home and she was upset, you know, and I had to like pull her through this because my daughter's being a student athlete, she drinks a liter of water every day. She has to stay hydrated throughout the day. This is like her thing as an athlete. And to get through the day, she drinks no sodas. She only drinks water. So now she had to go through the change. Well, all the students did. And so she's drinking her water, and she only has 5 minutes instead of 10 minutes to get from class fourth period to fifth period. Okay, it just so happened that term, her fourth period was in the new gym, and her fifth period was in the administration building in the back corner of the building. There is no way, literally, she could fast walk and make it to class and be not tardy. Okay, physically, literally, she could not make it across campus from A to B and not be tardy. Thankfully, her teacher loved her, gave her leeway, knows she's a really good student, she's not a problem, that she's making every effort, she's never been late before, and, you know, kind of gave her a break. So she came in right as the bell rang or just after the bell rang, which is tardy. Okay, so she's frustrated, she's stressed out, she's sweating, she does not have time to use the restroom. She's drinking water, doesn't have time to stop and use the restroom in between classes, and classes are what, 50 minutes, 60 minutes long or longer? Okay, so the students literally with this new shortened passing period do not have time to get to use the restroom. Okay, and you've got girls with other issues, all right? So each class has 3 bathroom passes per term. All right, it was 10-week terms. So as she was getting to her last, on her second, she'd used her second bathroom. So what she would do is she'd get to class, and the teacher, because she liked her, and it was a study skills class, would give her a pass and let her use the restroom and come back, and it wasn't a problem. Okay, so anyway, I took her to the doctor. She had to go anyway. She talked to the doctor. The doctor gave her a note and said she's allowed to use the restroom whenever she needs to use the restroom. And so I gave that to her counselor and the teachers and everything. So now she's got a permanent bathroom pass. But this is ridiculous. We need to have the passing periods moved back to 10 minutes. We need to have the parents got a memo that this change is happening and not just dropped on the kids midterm. Then the student advocate said that, the students were polled on what they thought about it. And 7 out of 10 were against it. but we just decided to go with it anyway. And the principal said, oh, the kids will just adjust. Is this what we're teaching our kids? They have no input at all. They were dictated this change. The parents weren't informed. It was just really bad.
Okay, thank you. Since this is a non-agendized mm-hmm. item, we can't respond to you.
Okay,
I would recommend
fine.
That you contact
yeah.
The administration, and they'll work with you on it.
Okay, or, and I will follow up with that.
Left Lennon's and one's mine, but I'm trying to get...
Pardon me? Are you talking to us?
Sorry, Walter.
Okay.
Testing, and she didn't pass the testing, but she has to have Algebra 1, so she wasn't able to take the Algebra 1 at Cuesta. So now she's off track for her four-year college. So we've got to make up. So because of the budget cuts, I really want the board to consider approving an online curriculum that can be used for summer school. And the K-12 program online is an excellent program, and it can be approved quickly. And so I would love to help do that with any of you to get that going, because we have to supplement these kids' summer school. If adult school isn't approved, then we've got to get an online curriculum approved.
Okay.
It would be a big help.
Moore?
Thank you so much for your time.
Yes, ma'am.
May I suggest that Mrs. Kirby, is it Mrs.
Gordon.
Kirby? Mrs. Gordon, I beg your pardon. Schedule a meeting with Mr. Robinette to discuss her concerns.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I'll bring Kirby, too. So send you an email or...
Okay.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Before we move on to advanced agenda, Kim, can we do by consensus a rescheduling of the closed session that we're not able to do before the meeting?
Oops. Okay. If you can... decide tonight when you want to meet again to do that would be the simplest logistical setup, because
that's
it becomes an adjourned
step.
Meeting.
That's the next
we're
step.
Simply moving this item to the next point. Otherwise, we have to notice a whole new special meeting.
Okay. So my informal poll taking, which was not in violation of the Brown Act, I want to stress, indicates that Thursday... this coming Thursday in early afternoons, approximately 3 p.m., seems to work for everyone. Mark, would you
yes.
be available to participate by telephonically?
Yes, I will make myself available.
Okay, so the consensus is this coming Thursday, the 27th, at 3 p.m.
Excellent.
So J2 or J3 or whichever?
B3 probably,
B3,
but I do need to check the room availability. So
okay.
When we finish tonight's meeting, we will adjourn to...
Adjourn or recess?
We will adjourn the meeting to Thursday at 3 p.m.
Oh, all right. Great. Okay. And that's the consensus of the board, and that's what we'll do. Okay. Advanced agenda items.
You know, I know that there's an item regarding Proposition 13 on here, and I know this is real important to Mr. Buckman, who's not able to attend today. I would ask that we move that item either to the end of the Thursday meeting, or that we move it to our next meeting, which would be the retreat in July. Would that be acceptable to you, Mark?
Yeah, I was even thinking the August 20th meeting, since there's no rush on this at all.
August would work for me, that's for sure.
So that's putting it on open on the agenda?
No, that's I'm asking that the discussion of the item be moved forward to that date. That thank you, Ellen. Yeah.
Okay. Put a time. But I agree with the lateness of the hour. Go figure. And anybody input? Report by board members, good of the cause? Mr. Buckman?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay. Mark, it was great having you be able to join us. I've been dragged kicking and screaming across the new frontier into the new technology.
Well, I went and got my hair done, and I'm not even up there. So, I did want to thank the board for understanding my absence and getting the medical help I need following my car accident.
That's the most important thing, my friends. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night, everybody. We'll be adjourned.